Wolf flicked the tip of his dripping tongue over his engorged nostrils. Wolf was gifted with a nose that was the envy of all that hunted and prowled in the dark and lonely back roads of the forest. The long, ugly appendage on his ravaged face could alert him to an opportunity, sending him loping off through the undergrowth to some poor dirt scratcher who would be left with an empty space in their heart. Granny made all sorts of ointments and elixirs, and her reputation of providing comfort without favour drew folk from all the neighbouring villages. The forest was quiet around the cottage. The forest creature's silence alerted Granny of an arrival. "Come out," she called, and assured comfort and treatment. No reply came. For 3 days the birds remained quiet. At night she'd taken to bolting the door and leaving a lamp burning. She sat on a stool outside the front door and ate from a jar of preserved damsons. She spoke again into the forest. "I can't heal your wounds unless you approach." Granny bent and put the jar down to the side of her feet. When she lifted her head, Wolf was standing in front of her. Yellow-eyed, long, dirty nails, his blackened teeth revealed in half a smile. "I feel your turmoil," she said, rising. "Let me help." Wolf stared. Granny backed into the cottage. Wolf's yellow eyes were fixed hard. Granny knew his purpose. She glanced to the side, remembering her dressmaking scissors. Wolf's strike was swift. Granny hoarsely muttered, "They will come for vengeance. They will be cruel." Wolf had no fear of vengeance. Vengeance turned men into hounds. He was too cunning for hounds. He lifted his nose, drew in the air and tasted it. The forest lay still and quiet. The only sound was the gurgling death rattle coming from the papery-skinned Granny spread across the floor. Blood was leaking from her in spurts. Her bulging eyes rolled. She would have given everything she owned, or had any memory of owning, to be able to lift her hands and pull her torn throat back together again. Wolf had stalked Red along the trail. Granny's cottage was a gift, a place of ambush and a lair to bring back his prize. Red ambled along the trail. The forest was benign. Squirrels sauntered off the trail as she approached. Blackbirds chorused. She brushed the wicker basket across the tops of the bluebells and smiled as bees rose and settled again, gathering nectar to produce honey, which Granny would spoon onto her scone. The bacon and flour she brought would be put in Granny's cold store. She would leave with jars of honey sealed with waxed paper and linen tied with twine, and Granny would slip a jar of ointment into her basket for her brother's cracked hands. The precision instrument on the front of Wolf's face picked up the scent of the tenderling approaching the door. Red couldn't wait any longer. A pitcher of warm, sweet milk pressed for liberty on her bladder. She gingerly pushed the door open and called, "Granny, Granny, are you here?" The absence of the old woman's gravelly reply wasn't enough to deter Red. The porcelain pot was singing her song. She crossed the threshold into a frilly-doily decorated hell. Wolf gripped the cape of the sugar and spice, freeze-framing her. A whip was all it took to cast her across the room and onto the sofa. Abstinence and expectation lay their cold hands on his shoulders, sending shivers through his body. In times since gone, when austerity and hunger had set hundreds out to wander the country, he hunted amongst the bedraggled and deranged mass. A young one not returning after being hired out or getting lost in the wilderness was another sadness and cross to bear and was marked down to the horror of the times. The pickings were abundant. Now, in these more settled times, he kept to the forest's dark, desolate areas, sleeping in roofless briars, scavenging and moving on after he'd made a kill. The great hunter had become a shadow, entwined with the dark and the damp. He sprang onto her, his limbs trembling. Pinned down, Red stared into the eyes that lacked cruelty or kindness in equality. Wolf slobbered over her. She lost her grip of her bladder and leaked, making a puddle in the indent around Wolf's legs. Wolf lulled his head and dipped his tongue into the liqueur. Pork and carrots, grown in alkaline earth to melt in the mouth, was what this girl grew smooth and tender on. The pig farmer's daughter, no less. Red's eyes welled and tears flowed down her cheeks. The aqua puddles reflected Wolf's sunken features with unblinking honesty. Abstinence washed over him, spinning his head and turning his knees to jelly. Wolf's stomach contracted, shooting corrosive acid along his digestive tract, burning his tonsils. The strength seeped from him. He nearly pitched into his own reflection. With his senses stupefied and softened, Wolf never noticed the figure darkening the door. Woodcutter froze, his arm relaxed, and his heavy axe swung lazily by his leg. His brain shrunken and sluggish through grinding days of solitude, still had small embers of a survivor's instinct burning. Robotically, he turned to leave. Red's sobs stopped him. He looked over his shoulder, moving his heavy head as little as possible. Get out of here. They'll stretch your neck for sure. His grip loosened on the axe, sliding through his fingers until the head thumped down onto the floor. His encasement crumbled. He clenched the top of the handle and spun on the balls of his feet, raising the axe in one swift movement above his head. You raising your hand to me, I know you. My nose smells your sins, Wolf growled. Wolf assessed the corpse at the door. He had watched him before, burdened with sacks of charcoal, lumbering from village to village. He'd seen him carrying the axe from door to door of isolated cottages to split logs for the price of a sack of dried biscuits and a jug of milk. He'd seen the dirt scratchers send their young out to the fields when he arrived for work, and he saw how they kept a watchful eye until he had retreated to the trail he'd emerged from. There's enough for two. Lower the tree breaker and step up to the table, Wolf enticed. Wolf tempted Woodcutter with promises of good times and illusions of comradeship, with promises of sharing, freedom, and hunting. As he laid out this vision before Woodcutter, he mused, "Whilst this fool dangles from a rope, I'll be lying up under a tree, falling into a sated oblivion." Woodcutter's brain dissolved into a grey, bubbling soup. Frustration tingled down his spine. He rehearsed his lines. I was no part of this. I only came to split logs. And they lacked any weight of truth, even to him. He closed his eyes to try and emulsify his brain. He ached to return to the natural, simple rhythm of his life. Hunger had Wolf in its clutches. He needed to concentrate to keep his knees locked. Only the steel of his will kept him from folding up and falling into a heap of shaking, sweating, premature rapture. The only brain cell not employed with Woodcutter propelled Red to the pinnacle of his consciousness. With a flash of stained incisors, he returned Red to the sofa. The gnash of teeth startled Woodcutter. His eyes snapped open. Wolf's head swung round to Woodcutter with a jerk, sending a wobble down Wolf's legs. Wolf lurched forward to regain his balance. The axe swung through the air again. Wolf's head was cleaved from left ear to right nostril. Woodcutter collapsed to his knees beside Wolf's corpse and wailed. Red pushed past him and bolted out into the daylight. Woodcutter moved to the door to watch her escape, the only witness to his honourable deed. Red's knees folded before she reached the tree line. She crumbled to the ground, her clothing dishevelled, her cape lying over her head. Woodcutter moved slowly into the light towards Red. There was no rush. This was his funeral parade. He lifted the cape from Red's head. Wolf had sliced her artery, pleasuring himself as life's spark faded from her eyes. Woodcutter rolled her onto her back. He pulled her dress back down to cover her naked legs and straightened the cape around her. He covered her face with a soft, clean linen towel from the cottage to hide her delicate features from the crows. His last act, before he headed into the woods to live the rest of his days as a hunted man, for they would surely come for him, craving blood to placate their grief, he retrieved his axe and was gone into the thicket, sadness and fear weighing on his shoulders. Red's father and brothers arrived at the cottage as the sun lost its heat. They roared and bellowed, swore revenge. Wolf's teeth were pulled for souvenirs. A great fire lit. Red and Granny were loaded into the back of a cart and taken away. Wolf was stripped and cast upon the fire. As morning arrived, riders were dispatched to the villages that ringed the forest. Wolf's smouldering bones were retrieved from the embers, pulverized, and cast north, south, and west. Men with cudgels and scythes, dogs with bloodlust, set forth into the woods, from all quarters, each party carrying a rope and a Bible. Gruff men with hands hard from manual labour beat through the bracken. Ministers and landlords with silk handkerchiefs directed with voices of authority from the trails, and slowly they stumbled and crashed towards the centre of the forest, sending forest creatures panicked and terrified before them. For a week, the woods shivered in a cacophony of howling dogs. The parties returned to their villages exhausted and downcast, for fields needed worked, forges needed fired up, and children needed constrained to their cottages whilst the culprit was still loose. All except for the villagers to the east of the forest, who returned absent of the rope. The miller had a fine telling axe, which no one would ever inquire why he possessed such a tool. Those excited men uncorked a barrel of rough cider, and the squire brought out his supply of brandy and wine. They set to drinking. The blacksmith drank brandy until he collapsed at the porch of his cottage, to be awakened in the morning by his wife, emptying the bedpots from his four children over him. The miller expelled the contents of his stomach over the schoolmaster who lay in the dirt. The widow hung over a five-bar gate as she had matched the men drink for drink. The minister lifted the widow's skirt and tried to enter her, but gave up and staggered home, cursing all womanhood. In the forest, upon the boughs of a gnarled ancient hawthorn, the rooks sit fat and plump, queuing patiently. A blackened and stretched figure hangs, twisting in the wind, its mouth agape, black holes for eyes and mutilated genitals. The blackened briar's leaves below drip with thick arterial blood, and as dusk falls, the trails of the forest are empty of people. For the legend is, this wood is haunted, and hunted by cruel spirits of those consumed by their desires.
That was a shortlisted story from the 2014 RTE Francis MacManus Short Story Competition, read by Colin Burns, and it was read by Andrew Bennett. The series of this year's 25 shortlisted stories continues tomorrow with Whaling Slang by John Fleming, read by Gary Murphy. The shortlisted stories of this year's competition can be heard on the programme website on rte.ie/radio1/Francis MacManus Short Story. The series producer of the Francis MacManus Short Story Competition is Cleanani Anluan.